following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wake up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now, let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, episode number 151 here on a beautiful Monday in Statesboro. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, after a tough loss to Troy this past week for Georgia Southern football, trying to get back on the winning ways and a short week to do so as Georgia Southern will take on the South Alabama Jaguars coming up this week on Thursday. It's the national television game for Georgia Southern, and no stranger for Georgia Southern and South Alabama. They're kind of getting used to this by now.
Third straight year they've done this, so we may as well just keep it going.
Might as well. Yeah. But again, a busy week for Georgia Southern athletics. A lot of Olympic sports going on as volleyball, men's and women's soccer starting to kind of go down the backstretch of their schedules. Really good things coming out of all of those programs we'll get to in just a little bit. We'll catch up with JT Crabtree from the Jags Radio Network a little bit later on to help us preview South Alabama and Georgia Southern. But as we dive around Georgia Southern athletics, Georgia Southern men's golf finished 11th last week at the Fighting Irish Classic. They are currently at the Bank of Tennessee Collegiate up in Johnson City Sunday through tomorrow. And taking a look at the leaderboard, everybody is off the course now. Georgia Southern sitting tied for 6 through day 2. They are 10 under par behind East Tennessee State. The host of the event is leading the way at 24 under par. One more round to go tomorrow afternoon before that one will go final for Georgia Southern men's golf. And then they are finished with their fall schedule at that point. So a early exit to their fall schedule, but getting a lot of good events in throughout the course of a relatively young team. You've got a good mix of guys that have been there, Ben Carr to name one, and then you've got some guys that are trying to step into new roles. We talked about that with Carter Collins a couple of weeks ago on Hail Southern Live.
You look for those fall experiences like traveling to a Minnesota, a Sapphire Valley in North Carolina, a Notre Dame, and now to Johnson City to finish up the fall slate. I saw Wilson Andrews had a great round. He birdied 5 of his final 6 holes. So when you have the depth of team and not just having to rely on Ben Carr to be Ben Carr, I mean, it's good that he can be that because he's had a tremendous season so far, and I anticipate he's going to be even better once the spring gets here. But guys like a Wilson Andrus are going to be important, especially when you're trying to defend a Sun Belt championship.
Individually, Georgia Southern being led by Ben Carr. Not really shocked there. He's tied for 5th overall at 7-under, chasing the leader in Remy Chartier from East Tennessee State, who is at 10-under. So within reach of one round to go, coming up tomorrow. Again, that one in Johnson City, Tennessee. Georgia Southern women's golf also in action at the Edesto Island Invitational. One for one. At the Plantation Course at the Edesto Island on Sunday through tomorrow. You know it's bad whenever you have people tweeting at you and saying, hey, can you help us pronounce this? Just kidding. Not to say I wouldn't have done the same thing. Because we did.
Well, call it when you've been in it as long as I have.
But Georgia Southern shooting really well in the Edesto Island Invitational. Georgia Southern sitting third by themselves at 6 over par, trying to chase the College of Charleston, who leads the way. Everybody off the course there as well. Individually, you've got 3 College of Charleston Cougars leading the way, but Georgia Southern sitting tied for 9th as Emma Bell leading the way at 1 over par. And you've also got Sarah Chen Radisson also at tied at 9th with 1 over par as well for the Eagles. They will have one more tournament coming up next Monday and Tuesday. They will be at the Kiawah Island, South Carolina for the Buccaneer Classic at Oak Point Golf Club. Georgia Southern Rifle had a heck of a weekend. They're ranked number 17th in the country as they won their second straight Georgia Collegiate Championship over at the Shooting Sports Education Center with wins over number 18 North Georgia and Georgia Military College. Bella Gomez took home the first individual in the small bore with a 570, ties her career high. Ashley Judson, we've talked about her a lot over the last year or so, took home first in air rifle with a 584. They will have another meet this Saturday at home against UAB, which you can watch on Twitch. You a Twitcher?
I feel like we've talked about this
before. We have.
Okay.
It's an online platform. You can go to the schedule, and there's a link that says watch on Twitch.
I've heard of Twitch. I've never watched anything on Twitch, but I remember us talking before that that's become almost the de facto rifle channel.
It is. It is indeed. Especially at Georgia Southern.
When is it again?
Next Saturday. We don't have anything.
That's okay. Yeah.
So get a chance to Twitch it up.
All right, you got me.
That sounds weird. I don't like it.
Let's Twitch this up.
I don't like it. Georgia Southern women's soccer 9-4-3 on the season as they got the win 1-0 in overtime against Texas State on Friday, as Karen Winka got the goal for Georgia Southern. They also tied Louisiana through two overtimes on Sunday. Marcella Montoya with the goal for Georgia Southern off a corner kick. Take a listen to some of these numbers. Michaela English for Georgia Southern in goal. In the last three matches, she's allowed one goal. That includes three overtimes. 19 shots on goal in those three. She's got six clean slates already, which is a shutout in soccer. Tied for 20th in the country. 81 saves on the season, 12th best in the NCAA. You want to talk about bringing in some talent, and that is what Chris Adams has done, especially in goal. And that's one of the things you and I talked to him before the season that he wanted to really focus on. There weren't a whole lot of clean slates, not a whole lot of shutouts for Georgia Southern a year ago, but have done it six times already.
You wonder how when you make the jump up from one level to another, and this just isn't a conference deal where you're moving from the SoCon to the Sun Belt. Remember, he was a Division II. He's a very successful Division II coach. And granted, a lot of those relationships probably existed from the past, but now when you have to recruit and be the guy that's bringing in the talent for a Sun Belt institution, and the way that he raved about who he was going to bring in after the spring when he had a couple of those matches, specifically the Ole Miss match when they lost 3-0, but they go back down, they fight them closely, they only lose by one goal, and you could feel the ability that he has to, one, build this program, and two, be able to find the players that he needs that quickly to build that program, so it's not an instance where the bricks are going to have to be laid one by one, but you've got more people helping you so you can get the house up quicker.
We've talked about all the success for women's soccer this year. What does it really mean? They're third in the Sun Belt right now with 14 points. And the way soccer works, you get 3 points for a win, 1 point for a tie. And they are only 1 point behind Ark State. They're actually tied for second, but because the way everything shakes out,
and
they're third.
Ark State's the team that beat them.
Arkansas State is the team that beat them. It took overtime out in Jonesboro a couple of weeks ago. Still got a point for it. And so you are 1 point behind Arkansas State with a couple of weeks left. They only have one match this week at home. It'll be a Coastal Carolina kickoff on Friday, a 7 p.m. start over at Eagle Field. Georgia Southern men's soccer, a tough start to MAC play in their first edition of MAC play, their first year in the MAC. But the first two games did not go the way for Georgia Southern. Lost 2-0 against Akron on Thursday and then 4-0 against Bowling Green on Saturday. We talked about it last week. Both of those teams receiving votes in the top 25. At some point this season, both of those teams have been in the top 25. And so really, really tough opponents for Georgia Southern men's soccer. They will be out of conference this week, tomorrow at South Carolina, 7 p.m. the kickoff from Columbia. And then on Saturday, they will be at home against the Mercer Bears, 7 p.m. kickoff as well over at Eagle Field.
And they're also building towards that matchup against West Virginia, a team that's been in the top five for most of the year.
Yeah. I think right now they're because of Aaron Soka, you can go on the schedule and actually see West Virginia is number 4. I think the soccer rankings come out on Tuesday morning, so that may switch a little bit tomorrow. But As of right now, number 4 in the country, West Virginia. That'll be on Halloween, October the 31st, 1 p.m., the kickoff against West Virginia.
And that is in town.
Correct. At Eagle Field. Georgia Southern Volleyball had a heck of a week as they swept Georgia State 3-2 twice. They did it on Thursday up in Atlanta, Saturday inside Hander Fieldhouse. They are 12-4, 5-1 on the season in Sun Belt Conference play. And you want to talk about a turnaround for this program. Chad Willis and his staff have done a fantastic job. We've talked about it time and time again, how good of people they are, and now getting it done on the floor. Georgia Southern, again, 5-1 in conference play. They are second in the East Division behind Coastal Carolina, a lot like we talked about with women's soccer, the team that beat them. And so just a game behind Coastal Carolina. They'll be in Alabama this week, Troy on Friday, and then South Alabama, a big match on Saturday, 7 p.m. for both of those. But South Alabama is who they are tied for second place with. So a big opportunity for Georgia Southern Volleyball this weekend down in Mobile.
And I think about the Troy match last year. I know that the season didn't go that successfully, but Troy was 12-2 when they came in here last year, and Georgia Southern dominated the match. Baylor Bumford broke the school record for blocks, and then they broke it again in the tournament in that five-set victory against the Trojans, their first-ever victory in Sun Belt tournament play. So for whatever reason, against a team that was exponentially better record-wise, they were able to work their way into a win. Now this year, this is where rubber's meeting road a little bit, because especially in Sun Belt play, Georgia Southern Volleyball hasn't fished in these waters. To be 5-1, having swept Georgia State, they swept a road trip already, taking both in Louisiana. They split their homestand against the Carolinas. But now you really have to continue to play consistent volleyball. We've seen how well that Chamblee Russell has played in spurts, Maya Wilson, Baylor Bumford. Grace Slater has really stepped in. She's become one of the league's best setters. And I know that Chad's not going for individual honors, but I got to think that he's the early front runner for Coach of the Year in the league.
Oh, I would think so.
I have to think
you
he
would,
is.
Yeah. And you look at the rest of the schedule for volleyball, they've got a couple of weeks left in it. After this week, when they're at Alabama's, between Troy and South Alabama again Friday and Saturday this week, they've got 6 of their last 8 at home.
That's the way to do it.
And so you've got Little Rock and Arkansas State the following week, Texas State and UTA coming in on a Friday, Sunday. You have to go to the Carolinas and Coastal Carolina, who Georgia Southern's trying to chase for that top spot in Appalachian State on a Friday, Sunday. And then the second week of November, you finish off the regular season with Troy and South Alabama. Again, South Alabama, a team that you're tied with as of right now, and Lord only knows what can happen by the time we get to November 13th. But then you got to turn right around and head to Foley, Alabama, somewhere that Georgia Southern Volleyball likes very well.
Absolutely.
With the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, hopefully they will go to get some dinner rolls.
He's been pretty adamant about being able to play at home because they had those three non-conference tournaments, something that Georgia Southern Volleyball doesn't get to do very often. Granted, they did have the one at UAB, but he was very specific about not necessarily worrying about how to get ready to play on the road, because so many of their matches are at home this year. Getting used to your home environment, your crowd, your fans, how you feed off of that energy. And so far, they've been very successful in that regard.
Again, you can join the conversation along with us by commenting here on the Facebook live stream. You can text us 912-274-3607 or tweet at GS Sports Network as we dive into Georgia Southern football. This past weekend, the tale of two halves at Veterans Memorial Stadium between Georgia Southern and the Trojans of Troy. And it felt like I was not talking about the same game at halftime that I was in the Ford locker room wrap-up this week. But Georgia Southern down 17-3 at half. And again, we talk about it time and time again. Georgia Southern is not a place for moral victories. But you got to be really encouraged of what you saw in the second half. Georgia Southern putting up 15 points in the third quarter, back-to-back scores because of what Georgia Southern was able to do on the defensive side in the second half. Really, really held Troy at bay in the second half, especially early in that game. But it was a 27-24 victory for Troy over Georgia Southern on a last couple of minute field goal by Brooks Buse to make it 27-24.
In effect, what they did was score 21 points in just over a quarter for the second straight week, because they did the same against Arkansas State, and that ended up being a runaway victory. But they had to do it this way. There was 10:55 left in the third after Reggie Todd's touchdown made the score 24-3. It felt like it was going to be a runaway.
Yeah.
It really did. But then Somehow they got the spark from a true freshman in Derwin Burgess, who caught a pass, avoided two men, one of the sickest spin moves I've seen, spinning outside to avoid the NC State transfer and Tyon Palmer. He goes 57 yards downfield. Logan Wright punctuates the drive with a one-yard touchdown run, and then the analytics came into play because that cut it to 24-9. You're thinking, okay, why is Georgia Southern going for two? You kick the extra point. You get down by 14. You're down by that much that early. The idea is to score as many points as possible so you can win the game in regulation. Because let's say Georgia Southern would have been down 24-23 with 10 seconds left and decided to go for two and they missed it.
Yeah.
Well, if they miss it early, at least they have a chance to make up for it later on in the game. If you don't, you still lose the game. So it's not as if there's anything for doing it this way as opposed to doing it this way. But it's simple math. It comes down to giving yourself a chance to win in regulation if you go for two earlier. As it worked out, Georgia Southern got the two when Justin Tomlin scrambled in. And they had two chances to win the game with the ball. Now, it ended up that Alex Rainer had to kick two field goals, but at the same time, if you don't get the two early, then Rainer's not afforded the chance to make the second field goal to tie the game at 24 anyway, with about 6 minutes left.
And you know I'm not an analytics guy, but a lot of stretches of the imagination. But that's where I think analytics can play a big role, because I think, heck, even 3, 4, 5 years ago, before you have the analytics books, I don't know that you're thinking about going for two at that
Absolutely
point.
Absolutely not. No way you're not.
But because the book says, and I'm not saying that every decision made on the Georgia Southern sideline is based off of the book and analytics and whatnot. There's still a lot of feel that happens on the sideline, and it's not just if the book says it, you got to do it.
There's still some of the, what Hawk Harrelson would say, T-dub, T-dub, will to win.
You're going to get me on a soapbox here. But that's where it puts it in the back of your mind of, huh. Because when they were trotting the offense back out, I was like, what if, you know, it makes sense if you really think about it.
It's all about the math.
But a lot of times in the moment, you're not afforded a whole lot of opportunities and time to think about what could happen in a quarter and a half. It's just something that you wouldn't necessarily see, and you really wouldn't have seen it 5, 10 years ago.
It was 2 years ago that Chris Vanini from The Athletic did an article about this. Pat Fitzgerald, the head coach at Northwestern, is a big proponent of this. John Harbaugh with the Ravens, they love to do this. It's also a situation where if you don't think you're going to have a whole lot of possessions in a game, you'll go for two just to go for two because you don't know how many chances you're going to get. And he was specific, was Harbaugh, in regards to their matchup against the Chiefs within the last couple of years. Because when you're playing Patrick Mahomes, you need a chance to score as much as you can.
Yeah,
if you
I'd
only get the
so.
Ball 7 or 8 times, you might need to go for two a couple of times to maximize those full scores.
Right.
Now, when the Eagles are kicking the extra point, they could have gone down 24-10. It would have been fine. But the way the game worked out, by going for two and making it, like we just mentioned, Rainer's field goal could tie the game instead of it being a 24-20 game and needing to go for it on fourth and whatever it was to simply try to stay in it.
The numbers for this game, if you simply looked at a stat sheet and didn't look at the score, you would think this was not a good day for Georgia Southern. Because you look overall, Georgia Southern, 82 yards of rushing offense. Your leading rusher was Gerald Green with 33 total yards on 5 carries. Usually that's not necessarily a recipe for success, and it's really not a recipe for being in the game until what was the final drive.
They only ran 26 plays in the first half.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a stretch. Georgia Southern's first 5 drives, 4 of those were 3 and outs. You can't stay on the field. We mentioned J.D. King didn't get a touch in the first half because they rotate the running backs, but it's to a point where if you can't do anything on first and second down and you're forced to throw on third, and for Georgia Southern about 50% of the time that's an incomplete pass, then that's an opportunity where you don't get to touch the ball. And even Logan Wright, bless him, because he was so good the week before, didn't get a chance to get him going outside of the one-yard touchdown run. They got him for a loss a couple of times, which for Logan is a extreme statistical outlier. I will say that I thought Gerald Green and Jaylen White, when they were in, both ran hard.
Yes.
And the fact that we can't really speak a whole lot about JD because he didn't touch the ball, it hurt you a little bit. Now, granted, in the second half, the Eagles were hanging on to it better, and the defense turned it up. You had those 5 possessions where the Eagles only saw 13 snaps, and gave up 26 yards. So the defense, from that perspective, gave the offense a chance to not only get back into it, but a chance to win. And the Eagles had the ball with a tie game in just over 4 minutes left. Now, you had the pick. Bruce Buse kicks the field goal, ends up being special teams player of the week. Georgia Southern has another chance to get close to midfield, and then you have the kick interception, which, that of all ways to give it back, Troy, at the end of the game. Elijah Culp plays soccer, incidental kick straight up in the air, Javon Solomon diving interception. Yeah, the Eagles threw three picks, but the fact that they could rush for less than 100 yards and have the ball with a chance to win on the final drive of the game, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but no, that's exactly what we saw.
It doesn't. And this is something that you and I have talked about a lot off air, but something that I really wanted, because you say it very well, as most things. But, I mean, it's kind of your job. But we've talked about it a lot of getting the right guys and getting your most talented 11 on the field a lot. You saw that a lot this week with Amari Jones kind of shifting a little bit more to a slot receiver when he came back. Saw him make a couple of big plays. Having him, Gerald Green, Caleb Hood, all of these guys on the field at the same time was really beneficial for Georgia Southern, especially this week.
You had a wideout package of Hood, Kenerson, and Amari Jones at the same time. Those were your three wide receivers in one set. That's a heck of a lot of speed the Eagles could put onto the field, and we know that Kenerson is still getting used to being a wide receiver again. Hood's had to catch a lot. In fact, his 22 catches through the first six games, that's more than an Eagle has had since Miles Campbell and B.J. Johnson 5 years ago. So even though he's had some issues with drops earlier in the season, he is still the most reliable target. And then somebody like Amari, who only played one series combined the previous 3 weeks, he didn't get to touch the ball a whole lot because they didn't use him in the backfield. This was specifically as a slot receiver. He comes up with two big catches, both netting first downs. He had the one at the end of the first quarter that finally got Georgia Southern on track, and they ended up getting points off of that drive. They had the two straight passes. Ironically, the second one was to Caleb Hood to get the Eagles inside the five. But what kept biting them was the ill-timed penalties. At second and goal at the three, it ended up being third and goal at the 11 after a false start. Had another third down with a false start later on. Had a fourth and one with an illegal snap. But thankfully, the Eagles got the reprieve when Troy was called for disconcerting signals when the Eagles were going to punt in the fourth quarter. Got back to a fourth and one. And one of J.D. King's four carries resulted in a first down. But the one that really hurt, Georgia Southern had Troy second and 19 after a holding penalty and had a pass interference. And that moved it into Georgia Southern territory. It was a couple plays later. They had the long pass to Lacey. Not you. I know we're going to talk about another Lacey, too. But Orlando Lacey.
Trust me, we'll get there.
Yeah, it's. But then that lined up Buse enough to kick the game-winning field goal after Troy had milked the clock and forced Georgia Southern to use all three of its timeouts.
Put that one to bed as Georgia Southern falls to the Trojans of Troy 27-24 this past week. And what does Georgia Southern get to do? Head right back to the Yellowhammer State this week on Thursday. Is Georgia Southern going to take on the South Alabama Jaguars?
He is excited.
We're joined now by the part of the Jag Radio Network in JT Crabtree. JT, appreciate you joining us, bud.
What's going on, boys? I like the new digs, man. That
I
looks
know.
Good.
You hadn't been to Statesboro since we got our dungeon office.
I haven't. No, it looks good, man. I like it.
Take us into this South Alabama team. First-year head coach Kane Womack, and you and I talked about it over the last couple of weeks, but it's a little bit different of a feel around South Alabama right now.
Yeah, it's night and day, guys. And Danny, you've texted me a couple of times about how much you like listening to Kane Womack, and also props to you guys. You've said Womack correctly, so that's already plus one for you guys. We've got people in Mobile that still say Womack. I mean, I can't hold against the misspelled Womack, but anyway, it's been night and day. Just the energy level, and you expect that from a younger coach. Just the way things are run. I mean, Coach Womack got rid of the head coach's office and just made it an extension, basically, of the players' lounge. He put a couch in there, a Coke cooler, some PS5, some bean bags. He's like, let's just hang out in here. I'll work in the conference room or something. I don't know.
Wait, so he doesn't have an office?
No, he doesn't have his own office. Well, they have a room that's designated for the head coach, but he didn't want it. So he just made it into a hangout area, and he just works in the conference room.
That's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's it's awesome, man. And for an example, like today, we had some tech issues with our coach's show this morning, and we're about 15 minutes to airtime, and we can't connect to the studio from the restaurant. So I said, okay, let's pack it up. Let's go to the studio and do it real quick. I texted Coach, said, hey, we're going to go over here, and he walks in the studio on time, which props to him, coming straight from practice too, gets in there, says, man, this is cool. I like this. Let's keep doing this. I love it. It didn't bother him a bit. He's so laid back. He's great. He wants to do things in the community. Like we did a whiteout for the Louisiana game. That was his idea. We now come in the team. When the team arrives, they go through the crowd on parade floats. You guys will see that on Thursday. That was his idea. The blue jerseys with the battleship on the helmets, his idea. The Southpaw helmet you guys may have seen this past weekend, that's his idea. He's engaged in every facet of South Alabama football, which is a stark difference from years past, so it's pretty cool to watch.
Something I've noticed is that you guys have gone to a morning practice schedule. You have any effects that's had on the rest of the guys?
They love it. They love it. Now, it's not super early. They go 8:45, 10:45. But what's nice is that gets some time to sleep in by college football player standards. They can get some rest a little bit better, and they can spend all day doing really whatever the heck they want to the rest of the day. From our perspective, working the radio side and whatnot, I love it. I'm not up here after office hours having to wait around after practice to get some quotes. So it's nice on our side as well. It's a lot of fun. They're doing things that are efficient. Coach is big on time management and respecting not only his time, but also other people's time. And so it's been a nice difference.
What's kind of the mood around this team? You start out 3-0 on the season. You've dropped your last two in Sunbelt Conference play. What's kind of the mood around this team as a whole of what the first three as opposed to these last two?
Yeah, the last two have, honestly, they've sucked. Just the feeling afterwards has been awful. To the Louisiana game being so close and having so many opportunities and to not be able to execute them and to come out with a victory in a game where you really feel like you outplayed the Raging Cajuns. Then this past weekend was just, man, it was just self-inflicted wound after another. If we could proverbially shoot ourselves in the foot, we did. We got all 10 toes this past weekend. It was tough, man. With 13 penalties, the most we've had all year. You know, being up by 14 with I think it was around 7 minutes left to go, and you're feeling good. I mean, you're really controlling the pace of the game. You had some guys banged up, but other guys had stepped up. You felt really good. And then we called a flea flicker, and a defensive lineman came around, jumped in front of it. When we pitched it back to the quarterback, he was right there. And it was, I think it's technically an interception for the running back, which is bizarre. I'm not totally sure on the scoring of that, but that really changed the whole thing. And Coach talked about that today, was that, you know, when that play happened, everyone kind of just dropped their heads and said, all right, well, I guess we'll go back out there. And there was so much put on the defense at that point, too. Those dudes were gassed. We go to four overtimes, and you're going back out there. You need one more stop. Okay, we got it. No, we need one more stop. Go back up. Okay, no, we need one more stop. Go back out there. Those guys were gassed. I give them as much credit as I can for keeping us in there as long as they did. But it was this past Saturday was pretty deflating. You felt good after the Louisiana game. Had some chances but didn't capitalize, but felt good. But this one really stinks.
Kind of from the 100,000-foot view, everybody kind of got their heads turned a little bit whenever you announced that Major Applewhite was going to be your offensive coordinator. From the offensive side, what does it look like? What's the big things that have jumped out?
Yeah, there's a lot of – it's a lot more multiple. There's a lot more tight ends actually being used in the passing game, which is something under Steve Campbell was unheard of. You know, tight ends were referred to under – his scheme as super back. It was really just an extension of the offensive line. They didn't ever use a tight end in the passing game. Now you've got guys like primarily Lincoln Sefcik, who's a JUCO transfer. He's been used a lot. They like to mix the ball around a lot to different receivers with, you know, obviously Tolbert, you got Jalen Wayne, Colin Lacey, not you, the other Colin Lacey. Yeah. Yeah. Like I heard you guys say, we'll get to that. Cade Sutherland, just other guys that have been mixed in there. And their big thing is, you know, if we're going to be successful on offense, we need to get the ball to our best guys on the field, which, I mean, just on paper, right off the bat, that makes total sense. So they take their shots downfield. They do everything they can to just get the ball to playmakers' hands in space. You know, with Lacy, he was a high school running back and was electric. He was a really good track guy. Not you, Colin. Stop fist bumping on that. It's not you.
He put it up. And trust me, nobody's ever called me right, fast.
Look, you do realize as soon as Georgia Southern has to punt on Thursday and Colin Lacy goes back to return, I will guarantee you Terry says, no, he's right there.
That's one.
Don't worry. I'll try to mix it in too. Don't worry.
Do it to it.
We'll just confuse everybody. It's fine. The offense as a whole, it looks very different. Under Campbell and Edenfield, the offense was very much, we are running the football. We're running it up the middle. We're running it not so much on the edges. We're going to power run the football. And that didn't work every single time. And sometimes it would kind of be forcing the issue of we have to run the football up the middle. And obviously sometimes it's not going to work. So it's a lot more multiple. They're not so much stuck into doing the same thing over and over again. They've got different options. There's a lot of RPO that we use. And having a guy like Jake Bentley, who's, you know, not the most athletic guy in the world, but he's pretty smart and he knows when to make good decisions. Having a guy like that at quarterback to kind of stabilize the position a little bit under a new system has been a big help too.
It's got to mean a little bit more for somebody that started 42 games in his career. I know he's on his third school, but with a new offensive coordinator for a place like South, where the quarterback has been a revolving door for about 7 years now, to know that somebody with that kind of experience is in that position has to be a little comforting.
Yeah, the quarterback, you're right, Danny. The quarterback position has really been, it's been something that we just haven't been able to figure out for a long time. And really for about 8 years or so, almost every week you could go into it thinking, who's going to be the quarterback this week? You know, last year, for the most part, it was Desmond Trotter, but early on the year, Chance Levertich was mixed in. Year before that was Trotter and Cephas Johnson. And you go back and back and back and back, and every year it seems like there's two, maybe even three guys that would mix in at quarterback every single week, and we never really had a flow of who it was going to be every time. You know for a fact it's going to be Jake Bentley every play, unless something happens to him and he can't physically be out there. He's going to be out there every single play. And like I said, he can run it if he absolutely has to, but he's going to look to pass. He's going to look to throw the ball away. And he also, too, that sometimes gets lost, he knows when is a good time to take a sack. He's not going to go out there and force a bad pass when he doesn't have even the option to do that. If he's got to go take a hit, he's going to do it, which is something, again, in the past with some of the guys that we've had, they've tried to force some plays, make some bad decisions. And Jake really doesn't do that a whole lot. And, you know, you talk to him and do an interview with him here or there, you can tell he's been in the SEC. You know, just the answers he gives and the way he thinks. He's worked with, the quarterback country stuff, and he's worked with Jalen Tolbert for years. So that was a nice connection before they even got here. They'd worked together at QB country and with the Manning Passing Academy. So he's got a good rapport with everybody. He's really smart. But the big thing is the stability at a position that we haven't had in a long time, especially under a new system, has been huge.
Talk about that running back room, and it's one that's been affected by injuries a little bit. Kareem Walker, kind of the go-to guy that you thought for much of the year but didn't play last week against Texas State because of injury. And A.J. Phillips makes his first appearance last week against Texas State. What has that room kind of been like the last week and a half?
Yeah, it's been different guys each week. It started out as Kareem Walker, who, when we got him in over the summer, Mississippi State transfer, a guy out of high school who was really highly recruited, was committed to Ohio State and did the unthinkable, and on signing day flipped to Michigan of all teams.
That's fantastic.
Right. Great, great PR on signing day for him. He goes up there, plays a little bit for Harbaugh, does okay, gets some academic issues, goes JUCO, does okay there, goes to Mississippi State, plays a little bit in the first year under Moorhead. Then Moorhead's let go. They bring in Leach, and you know, they don't run the ball there now anymore. So he had no role. So he came to us really just looking for an opportunity. And before the season, he hadn't had a carry in a football game since 2018. And so he was just looking for an opportunity. And he's really your prototypical go-to guy. He's got a big build. He's a very good pass catcher, which was completely glossed over during fall camp. He can catch the ball pretty good. He's a very good runner. He's patient, kind of, not at the same level, but like I think of patient running backs, and Le'Veon Bell in the NFL sticks out immediately. He's a guy who's not just going to hit the hole just because he's supposed to. He'll wait for something to open up and then go. When he gets in some space, he's deceptively quick. But he's been banged up, and then the guy behind him out of camp was Terrion Avery, who's a former walk-on guy. He's been banged up with a shoulder injury lately, so then you turn to the third-string running back, who's another transfer, Brian Hill. He's a walk-on kid. He's the son of our running backs coach, Ernest Hill. He's a Mobile guy. He went to McGill-Tulane just down the road. Had a good high school career. Went to Tuskegee and didn't really do anything up there. So he said, let me come home. You know, I can play for my dad. I can play in my hometown. And sure enough, he kind of has a coming out party against Alcorn State, does well 2 weeks ago against Louisiana. And then Texas State, he starts to get a little bit banged up too. So enter AJ Phillips, who is a guy, again, local. He's from Chickasaw, which is just north of Mobile. Really good high school running back. They bring him here. And because of his athleticism and his build, they moved him to linebacker. Doesn't really do anything over there. They moved him back to running back, never did anything. And like you said, Colin, he comes in against Texas State, almost has 20 carries. He scores his first two career touchdowns. And I mean, I hate it for the guy because he's having a career day. And then he fumbles in the second overtime to keep the game alive when it was third down. The one thing you can't do is fumble the football. And unfortunately he did it, and Texas State got it, extended it two more overtimes and so on. But it's really been a revolving door. I don't know how much of – I mean, Kareem has practiced. He was on the trip this past week. I don't know if he's ready to come back and play on a short week. But you've got guys like A.J. Phillips. Brian Hill is banged up. I think really it's going to lean a lot on Phillips, on Hill. And then you'll also see R. Colin Lacey mixed in there, because I mentioned before he was a high school running back at Faith. They've used him a bit in the backfield, a little bit. But I think really right now it's just kind of, who do we got? Let's just give them the ball and see what happens.
Got to talk a little Jalen Tolbert, somebody that was good up until the start of last year, exploded on national TV against Southern Miss, has not really looked back since. Where has he made the biggest jump to become not just an all-conference guy, but an all-American guy?
Yeah, he's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start just in terms of touchdowns. He didn't get his first touchdown until this past weekend. Yeah. It was actually an overtime. He was the first wide receiver to have a touchdown this season for the Jags. It was the longest streak since our second year of football in 2010, when we went two games without a wide receiver scoring a touchdown. We got four games in and didn't have one. And in game five, we finally got one from Tolbert. Honestly, there wasn't a ton to improve in his game. His route running has always been pretty good. His leaping ability and his ability to quote-unquote moss guys has been pretty good. His blocking has been good. He's become a smarter football player. The big play potential is still there. I really don't know where he can improve more. Maybe the build. He's still kind of stringy a little bit and lanky. He's long. But really, he's become such a good representation of what South Alabama football needs. Being a local guy, and because he exploded last year, he had some opportunities in the transfer portal if he wanted to go somewhere else. And he said, no, I want to stay in Mobile and play. But I think really he's just a smart overall player. I think that's really the best way I can describe him.
I look at this two deep offense and defense. I see nine guys from Mobile. You being a Mobile guy, that's got to make you especially feel like there's a lot more pride in this program when you're keeping guys home.
It speaks to my soul, man. I love it. Being from the 251, this is my team. And what I really like too is, in total, what we kind of consider our area is Mobile and Baldwin County. So the connecting county on the other side of the bay where Fairhope, Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, all that is. That's kind of our territory, as we call it. And right now, between the two counties, there are 25 guys on the roster from those two counties. Kane Womack has made it a emphasis every year. They're going to bring in at least five guys from the local area in each signing class. Now, it might not be a scholarship guy. It could be a walk-on kid. But they're going to bring five local guys in every single year. And the team motto, the hashtag rather, has been hashtag our city. They've started putting it on the back of the helmets too. And they've really put an emphasis on trying to get the city to buy in as much as possible with this program. And like I said, this resonates with my soul, being a Mobile native and a South grad, and having my team reach out and just really pull in all things Mobile really speaks to me. I love it. There really has been a lot more local buy-in. I know in large parts what the coaching staff has done, just trying to get out there in the community, but also just having Hancock Whitney on stadium right now. Like I'm in my office now in the stadium, and having a place that is our home, and also for you guys, a place where the windows open in the broadcast booth is just phenomenal. Things like that, just little things. You know, the stadium, as you guys will see this week, it's built for a party. The whole the south end zone is a giant bar area. It's the Michelob Ultra Terrace is what we call it. Each sideline has drink rails at the top of the concourse everywhere. They've really made a fun atmosphere. And I think, you know, Mobile's an event town. It's Mardi Gras. People come out from Mardi Gras to party. And if there's something big going on in town, everyone in Mobile wants to say, I was there. And Jags football is starting to become one of the events in town that you want to go to every week. It's very different. The student section, I have to give props to the student section. Every week this year for home games, student section has been completely full. Nice. I don't know how it'll look for a Thursday night, but every game so far, the student section has been completely full. Even in pouring down rain against the Raging Cajuns a couple of weeks ago, they stayed. Even in the hour and a half long light delay that we had against Alcorn State, they stayed for that too. It's been impressive, man. I'm jealous they can walk across the street from the dorms and roll up for a football game.
Didn't realize it rained in Mobile. I wasn't aware of.
No, never.
Yeah. Only every time we go.
Every time we're there.
We are crossing our fingers because every home game it has poured. And we're supposed to have close to a sellout for the Southern Miss game to start it. And the walk-up crowd was just completely canned because an hour before kick, it was like a small hurricane was rolling through Mobile. And people didn't want to walk up to the game, or they stayed in their car. And so we ended up having just over 20,000, but still, every single home game, we can't catch a break. So we're crossing our fingers for Thursday, man.
We were going to get to this at some point throughout this discussion, but you bring up Hancock Whitney Stadium, being able to move from Ladd People Stadium into Hancock Whitney last year on campus facility. And I know this is something that is really near and dear to your heart, to get on campus and have your own facility. What has it done to this program?
I have an office, one, which is lovely.
I love it.
No, unselfishly, just the fact that it's our place, and yeah, it's in a perfect spot too. You know, I'll start with, you know, the stuff that we deal with just as broadcasters. Like I said before, the windows open in y'all's booth, which is, oh, thank you. There's
wow.
a column in my
I
booth.
I like that
but
note.
Yeah, look at me. Yeah, wait until Thursday. It'll be completely gone by Thursday. you know, just having everything that we need in one spot has been very, very nice, and it's a nice change. My gear is already set up and done for Thursday.
How about that?
That was unthinkable at Ladd, just because it wasn't our stadium. We couldn't set up anything beforehand.
You're still 48 hours from setup.
Right? But like things like that is something that, you know, you don't think about on the front end. Then you're like, oh, wait, I can leave this. Or after the game, I don't have to pack it up immediately. It's like, oh, I forget this. I'll get it next week. You know, something like that is something that we can do now. We were treated better on the road because we could go the night before on the road, set stuff up and leave it. That was never an option at home. Just from a fan standpoint or from a student standpoint, let me start there. Like I said, the fraternities are directly across the street. Next to the fraternities and sororities is all the dorms on campus. They literally walk a quarter of a mile at the most to get to the student section. The student section is on that side of the street. You walk across the street, that's closed. It's all tailgating. You walk right there, boom, you're in your seat. It's next to the football facility, all the practice fields and the field house right next to each other. Everything is just in one spot, and it's not 25 minutes downtown. And it's so easy for everyone to access campus because we've added different portals to enter onto campus, actual roads, different ways to get in there. There's parking directly adjacent for anybody. There's shuttles from campus taking you from, if we're on the far side of campus near, let's say, the College of Business, which is on the complete opposite side on University Boulevard, if you park over there, we got a shuttle that'll bring you all the way to the stadium for free. Just little things like that have been really huge. Like I talked before, if the stadium is built to be social, we know in this day and age that you're not coming to a football game just to watch a football game. Most of the time you're coming to hang out with your friends. And so we want to give you a place to hang out with your friends. You guys will see it on Thursday behind or right up under the video board. There's a giant bar that they roll in off of an 18 wheeler that we bring in every game day. It's got bar stools. It's got tables, taps, mixed drinks, whatever. It's from what I've heard, it's a pretty fun time over there. It's I wish we could have it upstairs, but professionalism and whatnot. But it's, guys, it really is exactly what we needed. It's, we went from 45,000 seat capacity at LAD to 25,450 at Hancock Whitney. It's exactly what we need. It's built to be expanded if we need it to be. But right now, it's in a great spot. We've got a club level. We've got a suite level that have all been sold out. Those are sold out for 3 years, too, which is just awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of local buy-in. And just every time we have someone new, because last year we opened the stadium because of COVID, not everyone could get in here. Now we've got casual folks coming in here. We have tailgating on campus for the first time ever. We've had baseball and basketball, but nobody tailgates for that really like you do for football. And just driving around campus and seeing people with tents up on campus is pretty cool because we've never done it before. It's really exciting, and it's just getting started, which is, I think, what excites me the most about it, is that it's already got such a good foundation. It's only going to get better.
We've talked about the offense for South Alabama, but flip it over to the defensive side real quick. And part of what really jumps off the page is two things. One, you guys do not give up anything on third down. 21% on the season, tops in the nation. And in the red zone, for whatever reason, you guys are so good. Just 56% giving up red zone scores, tops in the Sun Belt, second in the nation. And what has led to being able to do that, let alone say that?
Yeah, that's that's that swarm D for you. And it's kind of similar to what Kane did when he was here the first time as defensive coordinator in 16 and 17. His first year in 16, he brought the points per game down 10 points. And I think it was the second largest year-to-year turnaround in the country at the time. He's done pretty much the same thing here this year with Corey Batune. They run it's a 4-2-5 defense. They call it their swarm defense. It's predicated on vision coverage, using your eyes, being smart, but also having some flexibility and fluidity in the defense to make your own decisions. But when I've talked with the players about that they like the most is just that, we are trusted to make the right decision. It's not always we're telling you, you have to be here on this play. We're going to put you in a spot, but now you get to go make the decision. You get to go make the play. And that's really where the players have had the most fun, the most success. Like guys like Keith Gallman, who we've seen in years past be good in the tackling game and lead the Jags almost routinely in tackles. But that's usually been because he's the last line of defense and everyone has gotten through us. This year, it's just because he has the ability. If he wants to play up top, he can. If he wants to cycle down and play in the box, he can do that too. There's a lot of different options that this defense can do. And what's really exciting too is you've got a guy like Jamal Brooks transferred in from Missouri. Everyone else is pretty much the same personnel from last year, especially the defensive line and the defensive backs. Everyone else is pretty much the same guys from last year. It's just been such a quick buy-in, and the players have been, they've been pretty heady. I've been really impressed of how quickly they have turned around this defense. And fall camp, the defense is always ahead of the offense, and we thought, okay, the offense is really behind right now, but it turns out, no, the defense is just that darn good so far. So, y'all's triple option always gives us fits. It doesn't matter what kind of defense we're running. It doesn't even have to be y'all's. I mean, Cal Poly's triple option burned us 42-7 in 2010, and I'll never forget that. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. They've actually, they've been doing scout stuff against y'all's offense for the last 2 weeks. They had that bye week, and they said, hey, let's try it. You know, we're going to have a short week on them. Let's mix it in there. Let's get some different looks. Let's just darn get ready for you guys, because, you know, we still have never defeated you guys, and I'm going to eat the microphone right now because I'm not happy about it.
We could go there. We could go there with the 7-0 all-time record, but the last 2 years, mighty close. Jags have had fourth quarter leads in each of those two games. It was double overtime in 19 at Ladd. Last year, Georgia Southern scores 14 in the fourth, thanks to Wesley Kennedy to pull one out by 7. Tolbert had the chance in the end zone. Final couple of seconds, ball gets knocked away. So it's definitely trending towards the Jaguars getting closer, and it would seem like if it's going to be broken, that in your minds this would be the one. Not necessarily because it's a short week, not necessarily because you're coming off of the tough loss against Texas State, but just the fact you're probably tired of hearing about the fact that Georgia Southern 7-0 against the Jaguars.
Yes. Yeah, and really, you know, it's funny because Kane remembers the games that we played against you guys from his first tenure. And his last year in 2017 was obviously the 52-0 game. And so, I mean, what you guys do, what you guys did and have done to this program in the past is not lost on him, even though he's been gone for 3 years. He remembers the past. So I'm really curious how much they're going to come out, how quickly they're going to come out, because that's something, too. The offense has been terrible to open the game so far for the Jags. I'm really curious, after having a game like we did on Saturday, losing in quadruple overtime, and Kane Womack told the guys straight after the game, said, look, you deserve to lose that game. We played bad. You deserve to lose it. I'm curious how much fire they're going to come out with to start the game, come out with on Thursday.
All right, this is going to be the most important question we ask you throughout this. Where are you taking us to eat on, I guess, Wednesday night?
That is the most important question, isn't it? I asked Jay Walker that 2 weeks ago, and he said, my couch, I'm not driving over till game day. And I was so disappointed because I was looking forward to going out with Jay. But maybe I can get him for baseball. No, I go there for baseball, too. Well, darn it.
Hey,
Jay?
That's better.
Yeah, it is better. So, yeah.
Top will cook for you. You're good.
What's nice about where we are on campus now is there's actually a couple of sports bars around campus that were here already. The staple is Heroes Sports Bar. It's literally, there's Hillcrest, Old Shell, that makes a T when you enter campus. Then directly across from Hillcrest is Stadium Boulevard, takes you right to Hancock Whitney Stadium. And at the corner of Old Shell and Hillcrest, that's where Heroes is. So it's literally walking distance to the football stadium. Really good food. Spinach, crawfish, spinach, and artichoke dip has been the number one food in Mobile for the past like 8 years or something like that. Really good. Really good drink selection. They got happy hour and whatnot. They're, yeah, that's where we're going.
All right.
Crawfish, spinach, artichoke dip.
Dude, I
one of these things just doesn't belong here.
Right? It sounds bizarre. It doesn't make any sense. But I'm telling you, it's the real deal. It's legit.
Okay.
All right, we'll have the review of it next week. And if it's awful,
we'll do it.
Back
don't twist anymore. We're good.
Yeah, we got to get you in there. Win in Rome, right?
Yeah.
I won't make you guys go down to Wenzel's and have some raw oysters.
No. That no.
We've done that.
I was gonna say, Danny, you did that in Montgomery, didn't you?
Y'all have done it.
And you got the fried oysters.
Whatever Matt bought for us that night, that's what we ate. That's probably the better way to put that one.
That's true.
I gotta get me a Rockefeller. Here we go.
JT, appreciate the time. Looking forward again to catch up with you this week, bud.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Should be a fun one. We'll see how it plays out. And thanks for having me on, guys. Looking forward to seeing you.
All appreciate it, bud.
See ya.
Once again, that's JT Crabtree, the great part of the Jags Radio Network, has been a big friend of ours for, God, ever since we joined the league, I think he was still a student when we joined the league. But man, he is one of the, and I feel like we say the same thing every week, but he is one of the good guys in this league. Absolutely love me some JT.
He's so fired up for this.
Oh, no doubt.
Well, the fact, like we mentioned, he's a Mobile guy. He went to South. And he was all fired up because they finally changed his photo on the website. He finally got an updated photo.
He said 8 years between.
Come on, he's been there. And I really, really like him. And yeah. this is becoming a thing, having to play them on a short week. And, yeah, you wish you had the couple of extra days to find out some more. But at the same time, Georgia Southern just lost on the road. They just lost in quadruple overtime. Just toss it up in the air. Let's just go do it.
Yeah. One thing we've got to bring up before we get to Thursday night, South Alabama on the defensive side is going to be without one of their top defenders. A.J. DeShazer was flagged for a targeting penalty in the second half of that game against Texas State, so he will miss the first half of the game against Georgia Southern.
Correct.
And he's somebody, one of the top tacklers, like we talked about, 15 tackles on the season, but somebody that, like JT was talking about, one of those same names that you've heard year after year after year.
And him especially, because he's been a starter for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And even the guy behind him, Sean Jennings, the Alabama transfer, who's finally healthy, or at least he was, he's been dealing with some more knee issues, so they may be down to their number three, what they call the stinger. That's the weak side linebacker in their 4-2-5. They got a lot of funky names, but Trey Kaiser may see a lot more playing time. They've got what they call the Bandit. A lot of teams have Bandits. The Wolf, which is their rush linebacker. The Husky is their nickelback. The Rover is the extra safety. And we remember these a little bit from 16-17 when Kane was the DC, when Joey Jones was the head coach. But now that he's the head guy and it's truly his program, they just kind of they have a little bit more pop to him, especially when he's coming from Indiana after he was a Broyles finalist last year.
I still can't get over that he doesn't have an office. Or doesn't use an office. I guess he has it. He just doesn't use it.
That may change a couple years down the line. But if you're the youngest head coach in the country, you've got to be a little bit different.
One of those standing desks type people. Well,
and I anticipate Jake Spavadal being a similar guy because we'll get a chance to see them in a few weeks. He's one of the youngest coaches in the country as well. I think he's a month. I think he's 36. So he's 3 months older than I am. But when you have your first job and you're that young, remember when he was the D coordinator at Eastern Illinois, he was the youngest D coordinator in the FCS at just 26. So he's used to being put in a primary spot at a very young age.
Going to be a fun one this week. 7:30 the kickoff Eastern time. It'll be 6:30 local time in Mobile. We'll be on the air at 5:30 Eastern, 4:30 local. Got it.
We should remind people, if you didn't get a chance to see it on social, there will be no Hail Southern Live this week due to, number one, a coaching change, but two, some logistics, some travel, trying to get to Mobile and making sure they've got enough time for practice. There will be no Hail Southern Live this week. We will pick it back up next Thursday on the bye week, 7 to 8 p.m. on the 21st of October. We'll still be at Gene Bishop Fieldhouse. We might talk a little bit of Georgia Southern football, but that will largely be an Olympic version of Hail Southern Live.
Might get to catch up with some of the people that make Georgia Southern football tick that you don't normally hear from. Maybe some equipment people, some training people, some
free food, free drink. Come to the Gene Bishop Fieldhouse. Doors open at 6:30. We'd love to pack it out, especially on a bye week when we're talking about a lot of other things.
That's all you need. Free food, free drink. Fantastic.
That should have been it, right?
I'm in.
Well, you've got to be.
Well, that's true.
I mean, we both got to be.
Yeah, true.
I don't know if Terry could do all this.
7:30 kickoff for Georgia Southern and South Alabama on Thursday. It's on ESPNU. You can turn them down and use the Varsity app to sync us up as we get ready for the Cutwater Tailgate Show starting at 5:30. Colin Lacey, Frank Sulkowski, Russ Brown, Terry Harvin, Danny Reed will chime in. Going to have a lot of fun down at Hancock Whitney Stadium.
First time.
I know. I'm looking forward to it.
No more Ladd Peoples. No more.
I've heard JT talk about it for 3 years now. I'm happy I'm going to finally get to see it.
Well, from where we typically stay, it was a tough one to get to anyway. I'm talking about Ladd Peoples because you're in the middle of a neighborhood and all of a sudden there's this 40,000 seat stadium that just pops out of nowhere with this big parking lot. But now we actually, I remember this was 2 or 3 years ago when we were down there for either basketball or baseball. We drove by the site on the southeast corner of campus when they were just starting to put the bowl in and thinking, okay, this has potential.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to see the finished product a few years later.
Again, 7:30 the kickoff. We're on the air at 5:30 with the Cutwater Tailgate Show. We'll continue with football coverage Thursday, then pick up Hail Southern Live the following week. Again, October the 21st will be our next edition of Hail Southern Live. But for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.